This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najo, and we are talking tomatoes today. And with us is Holly Farrell. She is a horticulturist, an award-winning garden writer, and author of many books. And her latest is The Tomato Grower's Handbook, everything you need to know from seed to harvest and beyond. So many varieties, so many questions. What would you like to know about maximizing your harvest? Do you have tips you'd like to share with us? We'll be part of the conversation. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Holly, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well,
go ahead. Well, I think we should kick off by saying you say tomato, I say tomato.
Let's not call the whole thing off.
Absolutely. Let's grow some tomatoes.
As people can tell, you are over in the UK.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. But, you know, tomatoes are tomatoes all over the world and a very popular fruit, vegetable. Before people call in and say, hey, a tomato is not a vegetable, it's a fruit. Yeah, we know. But we like to call them a vegetable, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's what's the saying, you know, wisdom or knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad.
That's right. And you do start off your book with that wonderful saying. So I love that. Got a chuckle right away. So I knew what we were going to be in for when we were reading this book. And I do have to say, this is a fun, it's a little book. You know, as Lee, our technical director, was saying, when you said a handbook, I thought it was going to be 500 pages, but it's not. It's this cute little book. Graphics are wonderful. I think it would be a fantastic gift for your gardener, the gardener you have to buy a gift for. The colors are great. It just shouts tomato. It's just a fun book, and it's loaded with information, though, even though it's not 500 pages long. So, how did you get interested in gardening, Holly?
So I was not an outdoorsy kind of girl when I was growing up. I was bookish. I was indoors reading. If I was outdoors, it's because I was reading and I was lying on a rug in the middle of the garden. For me, the love started after university, so after college, when I ended up, through a variety of reasons, being quite unwell for a while and basically was then stuck indoors. I had to be indoors. And when I got well again, I thought, I've just got to get outside. So I took myself off to a chili farm and worked on a chili farm here in the UK on the south coast by the sea. And I worked there for 6 weeks. I worked for my board and I just fell in love with growing and plants and being outside. And so from there, it was off to college to get qualifications and start growing and gardening for people.
It's amazing how one little thing can change your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why did you decide to do, like I said earlier, you've done quite a few books. Why did you decide it was time for a tomato book?
I think tomatoes are one of those, they're an entry crop, you know, they're a gateway crop for growing other things. So if you haven't grown your own food before, if you haven't grown anything before, tomatoes are a really great thing to start with. Across all of my books, the one thing that I've aimed to do is to inspire people to just get out there and give it a go and start growing. And if you were going to start growing your own food, and maybe you've grown some salad leaves or sprouted some seeds or some strawberries, you know, something simple, but you were willing to give something else a go, you're not going to then go, well, I'm going to plant cabbages or, you know, something complicated that takes a long time to come to harvest and can be beset by quite a few problems. Tomatoes are relatively straightforward to grow. You can eat them straight off the plant. They're delicious. Why not tomatoes?
You're absolutely right. And they certainly taste much better than what you buy in the grocery store.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
The tomatoes in the store, they've been picked at least several days before, probably. They've probably been picked underripe as well, so they last longer on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had that chance of being ripened in the sunshine. And there is nothing that can beat a tomato warm in the sun, picked straight from the plant, straight into your mouth. As soon as you pick a tomato, the sugars inside, they start to convert into starch. So they're always going to be sweetest and most delicious straight after you pick them, which is why most of my tomatoes never actually make it to the kitchen.
especially right there in the hot heat of the summer. And it's as you mentioned in your book, it's better for our planet too.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can grow even just a few things that you feed to feed yourself, you're reducing packaging, you're reducing transport miles of things being shipped across the country as well. And it's also the plant itself is sequestering carbon. So the more plants we grow, the better it is.
Absolutely. Well, we do have a call from Mia in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Mia.
Hi, Mia.
Hi, good morning, you guys. Thank you for taking my question. So as you know, I'm based in Milwaukee, and I don't necessarily have a lot of outdoor space to grow things. I'm a beginner planter, if you'll call it that, and have a little herb garden and love to grow basil. And we know tomatoes and basil go really well together. So I'm wondering if there's a specific species, type, and then method of growing tomatoes indoors that you would recommend.
Okay, so you're right, absolutely. Basil and tomatoes go really well together, but they also grow really well together. If you grow your tomatoes with the basil, you're actually going to enhance the flavor of the tomatoes. They've done scientific studies on this. The tomatoes taste better if you grow them with basil. So what you can do is if you've got space for your little herbs, then you can grow your tomatoes upwards, and then they're really going to take up very little space. So the kind of tomatoes you're looking for in the store, if you're going to buy plants or seeds, are called indeterminate or cordon tomatoes, they're sometimes known as well. These are the types that you're going to grow as a single stem straight up like a tree. You need to tie it into a stake so it doesn't flop over. And then basically your tomatoes will grow off that main stem, and they'll be going up, whereas your herbs are still around the base. So you've still got plenty of room.
That's a great idea, Mia. And you'll find plenty of those right now. And this is the weekend to do it. Memorial Day seems to be like and it's Memorial Day this weekend here in the States. And that seems to be like the weekend that everybody in the upper Midwest says, you've got to plant by now because we're not going to get any frost. Whether or not that's true or not, everybody can debate that. But that seems to be the perfect time. And, you know, tomatoes like warm soil. And it's actually kind of cool this weekend. So if you don't get them in until next weekend, which is supposed to be really warm, you should be good. So thanks for that question, Mia. Now, you actually talk about, we call it companion planting. You talk about it as intercropping, where you put different kinds of plants together. Why is that a good idea to do?
Well, first of all, you want to cover the ground, really, because if you're not covering the ground, so if you are growing those tall, thin tomato plants, you're going to have a lot of space around the base of them. Whether you're growing in a vegetable bed or whether you're growing in a pot, you've still got some empty space around that base of the plant. So if you don't plant something, nature's going to plant something for you. Weed seeds are going to come in and they're going to go, oh, excellent, I've got some space, I've got some light, and this pot or this garden is being watered regularly, perfect, I'll start growing. So if you grow something else, you reduce the work for you in terms of weeding. And so you may as well grow something that you can get a benefit from as well. So basil, like I said, is a really great one, or any other herbs. You might like to grow marigolds, which are a really great companion plant for tomatoes. So especially the Tagetes types. You can grow, obviously, the calendula types of the pot marigolds. Both are brilliant for attracting in pollinators and also things like hoverflies, which are going to be munching on the aphids that might try to get to your tomatoes. But the Tagetes ones are particularly good because from their roots, they secrete chemicals that will deter any soil-borne pests that might want to come along and munch your tomato roots. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely. We love win-wins. So tell us a little bit about the history of the tomato, because it really does have an interesting story behind it.
Yeah, it really does. So they come originally from South America. And I have to say, you guys over in the States were much quicker to pick them up as something that you could eat than we were in Europe and in the UK. So originally, because they're related to plants like deadly nightshade, people thought that they weren't edible. And, well, I'm not going to eat that because it's poisonous. So they were just grown as an ornamental crop. And they're known as, in Italy, for example, as pomodoro, because they were called pomme d'oro, which is the golden apple, the apple of gold, because originally mostly they were yellow rather than red. And so they were grown as these beautiful ornamental crops, which, you know, I think all the waste of all that delicious fruit that they were just staring at. Anyway, eventually, some people thought that they might be an aphrodisiac. So a few,
that's definitely one way to get people to eat them.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So a few people started eating them. And then they realized that those people weren't dying. So more people started eating them. And they were still not quite sure that these fruits were safe to eat. So they would generally get cooked a lot. You know, boiled to death is definitely the phrase that I would use here. So I'm not sure what nutrient value or flavor they had by the end of it, but people did start eating them by about the 1800s. So, like I said, America was much faster to pick up the tomato as something that you could eat and you could then eat raw. So there's a record of Thomas Jefferson growing and eating tomatoes in 1809, but it wasn't until maybe sort of 50 years later that here in the UK, people were actually going, oh, you know what, these are really tasty and we should grow more of them. And then from there, it's just taken off and there's thousands of varieties that we can grow now.
It's amazing. Every year there seems to be more and more varieties, and it's confusing sometimes. We're going to take a little bit of break and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Our guest is Holly Farrell. She's a horticulturist and author of many gardening books. Her latest is called The Tomato Grower's Handbook, Everything You Need to Know from Seed to Harvest and Beyond. What tomato questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. And coming up in the next hour of the show, we'll talk about the beneficial insects that you want to have in your garden. Right now, we're going to take some emails. Poor Nathaniel emailed us. The temperatures where he is got down to the high 20s. And he said that's probably about -5, -2 Celsius for those who do Celsius. And when he woke up this morning, his tomatoes and his peppers were sagging. So he's assuming that they're going to die. But he trimmed away the bad leaves in hopes of maybe encouraging some new growth. He's wondering if there is any recommendation for recovering plants suffering from spring frost, or should he just empty the pots and try again?
Yeah, that's a tough one, whether you cut your losses and just go again. I mean, maybe you could do a half and half approach, you know, select the best ones to keep and then maybe invest in a few more just so that you're sure that you're going to get a harvest. My sympathies.
I know.
We've all been there. We've all made that mistake. And put things out too soon or not protected, or, you know, it's really a question of, and this is no comfort now, obviously, really sorry, Nathaniel, but it's really a question of just keeping an eye on the weather all the time once you've planted out, so that you can rush out there with a bit of bubble wrap or horticultural fleece or newspaper or whatever you've got to hand just to keep the worst of the frost off. in terms of recovering them, yeah, I think you're doing the right thing. That sounds, you know, snip off the worst bits, hope for the best. If you can put them somewhere more sheltered, you know, cosset them a bit to help try and help them recover, then that would be great. And yeah, just make sure that they don't get frosted again by, yeah, covering them up overnight. And cross all your fingers and toes.
We're so optimistic as gardeners. It's not going to freeze. I know it's not going to freeze. Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the Memorial Day rule, Nathaniel. I'm really sorry that happened. It is so frustrating. But yeah, cover them up. I know a lot of people that use the gallon milk containers and even start them in that, and that works pretty well. So there's lots of options out there to try.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can DIY any sorts of containers to put over the top of things, or yeah, you can buy mini tunnels and cloches and all sorts of things while those plants are young. And even as they get older as well, if you grow bush tomatoes, determinate ones that aren't going to get tall like the cordon types, then you can continue to cover them. So because they're low to the ground.
Right.
So that is definitely something to consider if frosts are going to be a problem once your plants have got a bit bigger.
Right. Because once we get into fall, we have to worry about that again. So, yeah.
Yep.
So John emailed, is there a way to store or partially process fresh tomatoes until he has enough to can salsa or other sauces? He says it always seems he does not get enough tomatoes to make a complete batch.
Grow more tomatoes.
There's that.
That's one way to do it. But yeah, so what you can do is you can ripen them all on the whole truss or even the whole plant. So, and this is especially useful, as you say, going into the fall, going into autumn, as we call it. If you think frost is coming and your tomatoes haven't quite ripened yet, sometimes a great way to do that would be to pull up the whole plant, hang it upside down, and then let them ripen on the vine. So that can be a really good way to do that. If you haven't got space to hang the whole plant, then yeah, you can snip off the individual trusses and hang them and ripen them like that. Putting them in a drawer with a ripe banana or a ripe apple again can speed up the ripening so that then you've got lots of tomatoes all at once rather than them coming in dribs and drabs.
Now,
I think that's probably the best way. Try and speed up the ripening rather than storing the ones that are already ripe.
Sure. Now, in the book, you do mention about freezing the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And you freeze them together. You don't do anything to them other than just freeze them. You don't slice them, dice them, whatever, peel them.
Yeah, and if you are going to make them into a sauce, then you could do that too. You can freeze the ones that are ripe and then wait until you've got enough and then defrost them and then cook them up into one big batch of sauce or ketchup or whatever it is that you want to make, for sure.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for the email, John. We've got Mike in Minocqua who has a question. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Hey, good. I have a small greenhouse, and I use it because of the deer. That's the main thing. I keep things watered, and I always have some tomato plants in pots, big pots, and they leaf. You know, they get a lot. It's a great looking plant, but the tomatoes are either green by like the end of August, or they just don't grow. I just don't get good fruit. I was wondering if I should be adding fertilizer on a regular basis. You know, I use potting mix, but I don't fertilize it regularly. Should I be fertilizing the plants?
Good question. So the nutrient that's particularly going to encourage your plants to make more fruit is potassium. So you could try giving them a high potassium feed. So there's proprietary ones, things like Tomerite we have in this country. I'm sure you've got similar ones, even a rose feed. But if you look on the back of the label, it will have what's called an NPK ratio. N is nitrogen, P is phosphorus, and K, confusingly, is potassium. And so you want a ratio that's got a high number for the K. So that should encourage them to fruit. The other thing is make sure that you are trimming off side shoots and pinching out the side shoots to make sure that you're concentrating all the plant's energy into ripening those fruits that you've got rather than making more. And you want to be stopping the plant from producing any more trusses when it's already got 4, 5, 6 maximum probably. And then that way the plant's going to concentrate on that rather than making more leaves and more trusses of fruit that will never ripen.
And just trusses, when you say trusses, you mean like the main stem of the tomato?
Yes.
Okay.
So the truss is the bit of the stem that holds all the tomato fruits okay. on it. Yeah. So if you're growing a tall, thin tomato plant, a cordon tomato plant, you've got the main stem coming up the middle, like the trunk of a tree, and then you've got little truss branches coming off that and leaves. And that's all you want. So you don't want any more side shoots growing long out the sides. You would just want that main stem with leaves and trusses, and that's it.
Okay, excellent. Well, good luck with that, Mike. I hope you get more fruit this year. So thanks for the call.
Yeah, good luck, Mike.
So you have separated tomatoes into 4 main groups in your book. Tell us what those 4 main groups are and some of the characteristics of those. I've never seen them done like that, so I think it's a kind of a neat idea.
Okay, so yes, we've got basically different sizes of tomatoes, different shapes of tomatoes, and you would use those potentially for different things as well. So the smallest type of tomato you've got is a cherry tomato, which, you know, does what it says on the tin, is about the size of a cherry. And these are the ones that you're probably just going to eat straight off the plant like I do. Or if they make it to the kitchen, you're going to put them into a salad. Just eat them raw, probably. They're not that great for cooking, unless you want to roast them whole on the vine, which is delicious. But like I said, there's lots of crossover. The next group you've got is a salad tomato. So that's your kind of, that's a standard looking tomato. It's about the size of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a bit smaller
tennis
than a baseball.
Ball. But a tennis ball. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, about that kind of size. Usually round, nice and round, usually quite nice and red, although you can get different colours. And that's, like it says in the name, it's salad tomato. It's great for slicing into salads. You can put them in your sandwiches, that kind of thing. Again, generally one for eating raw rather than cooking. Then there's the plum tomatoes. So these are the ones that are going to be, if you buy canned tomatoes in the supermarket, these are the ones that are going to be in that can. So the interior of a plum tomato, for starters, obviously, it's more elongated in shape. And the interior has less seedy, innardy, gloopy stuff and more flesh. There's all sorts of technical stuff I could get into here, but basically it's got fewer seeds, more flesh, which means it's going to make a smoother sauce and a less bitter sauce. So that's the one that you'll be going to be chopping up and making your tomato sauces, your ketchups, and all your preserves and things. They're really great with the plum tomatoes. And then finally, the biggest ones are the beefsteak tomatoes. These are, you know, they can be as big as your hand. They can weigh up to 1 pound. They've got that sort of ribbing look over the top. So if you've ever been to France or read novels where women are wandering romantically through French markets and picking up tomatoes to have with crusty bread and olive oil, this is the kind of tomato that you're thinking of. And they are brilliant for slicing, as I said, with a bit of crusty bread and olive oil or lashings of butter. They do also make good sauces as well, because the inside of them is, again, not so much on the seeds and a lot of flesh.
Okay.
There's your four main groups.
Yeah, great. And then there's the heirloom.
Yes.
What's your definition of heirloom? Because, you know, you hear that all over the place, and there never seems to be like one definition.
No, I don't think there is, which is, I mean, once upon a time, we didn't need to say heirloom or heritage tomatoes because everything was what is now defined as a heritage or heirloom. It basically means that it's an old, probably an older variety, and it's open pollinated, and it's generally used in contrast to an F1 variety. So an F1 is one that's been bred for specific traits, like disease resistance, for example, so blight resistance, perhaps. And the thing with F1s is that you can buy a packet of F1 seed and grow your tomatoes. But if you save seeds from those tomatoes that you've grown, they won't necessarily come true next year. Whereas if you save seed from your heirloom or your heritage ones, they're open pollinated and they should come true next year. You'll always get a few rogues, but that's how it works. You take those out and you don't grow them again. And then that way, especially if you're growing seriously in every year, you can actually develop your own strains of a variety that's perfect for your plot. You select the best performers every year.
What are some other reasons to grow heirlooms?
It's all about diversity.
Yeah.
We have to maintain the diversity of our food crops, especially now with climate change. We just don't know what's going to happen. It's everything is so unpredictable. We don't know what varieties are going to do well and what varieties aren't in the future. So if we concentrate, if we put all our eggs in one basket, or all our tomatoes in one basket, and only have a few different varieties, what happens if they then can't cope with the conditions where you are? You're stuck then, and we lose the tomato as a food crop. Whereas if we maintain that diversity by growing as many different strains, both new and old, then it just gives us more options in the future.
We did get another email. Barbara emailed us. She's happy to say that she started 3 different types of tomatoes, cherry beefsteak and an orange variety of some sort, outside in gallon milk jugs for the first time ever starting seeds, and they are growing wonderfully. She is in Milwaukee, and it's still too cold at night or in general, so she'll wait probably 2 more weeks before transferring. Do you have any tips on what to do when transferring them to her raised bed? Are the garden mesh nets beneficial, and how would pollinators get in?
Okay, so first of all, moving them outside. Do this gradually. Imagine you are the tomato plant. You've had a lovely time, and it's been nice and warm, and you've been given every attention by your lovely gardener. And then if you just then get shoved outside, put into some cold ground and left your own devices in the cold air, it's going to be a bit of a shock, and you're going to take a few days, weeks even, to recover. So let's make it nice and gradual and easy for them. A bit like, you know, sending your kid off to college, you know, they still come back to get their laundry done, right? So, you know, it's doing it gradually. So put them outside during the day only. You know, when it's ready and you're pretty sure there aren't going to be any frosts, put them outside just for the day in a nice sunny spot, and then bring them back in overnight, and do this for about a week. And this just lets their skin, for want of a better word, just harden and toughen up a little bit, so that when you do then plant them out and they're out there all the time, they're ready for it. And then that way they will keep growing nice and smoothly and romp away, and you'll get a really great harvest. So if you want as well, you can leave them out overnight in the pots and maybe cover them with some fleece or newspaper before, you know, do that for a couple of nights before you then plant them out permanently. It's up to you. I tend to skip that bit sometimes. I'll just do the daytimes and then put them straight in the ground. And then they're out there permanently. In terms of pollination, tomatoes are actually self-fertile. So technically, they don't need a pollinator. So they don't need insects to come and buzz around the flowers. But they will be helped by the pollinators. And also having those flowers there with nectar and pollen that the insects can eat is really great for the insects too. So, you know, it's not just about our tomatoes, it's about helping them. Tomatoes don't generally, or at least in my experience here, tend to get afflicted by too many insects that you wouldn't want, pests, basically. So I wouldn't worry too much about putting any mesh around them. And if they do get a bit of aphid or whitefly or something like that, then either you can just sort of nip that bit off, put it in the compost, or you can have faith that some opportunistic insect is going to go, oh, look, there's lunch, and a hoverfly is going to come in, or a ladybird's going to come in. And ladybird larvae can eat thousands of of aphids in their lifetime. So, and that obviously helps them as well. So plant them out slowly and don't worry about the mesh.
There you go. When you're putting them out into that raised bed, do you have any tips on how deep they should be or how far apart they should be, that type of thing?
So actually, you can plant tomatoes a little bit deeper. Usually you would plant so that where the shoot turns into roots is at soil level. That's sort of standard rule for most garden plants. But you can put tomatoes in a little bit deeper, so you can bury a little bit of the stem, maybe half an inch or maximum an inch. And that's going to help them grow nice and sturdily. And then they can also develop more roots off the side of that bit that you've buried, which will obviously then help them take up more nutrients and things. And then in terms of spacing, it depends what type you're growing. So if you're growing cordon tomatoes that go, you know, straight up, they're relatively narrow. But you want to make sure that they've also got plenty of air circulation around them, because if you cram in too many plants close together, that's when you're going to get the humidity around the leaves that can then foster the chance for fungal diseases to take hold. And that's when the dreaded blight can come in. So give them a couple of feet between each plant, at least, and then that will make sure that you've got plenty of air circulation, space for the plants to grow.
Let's talk a little bit about watering tomatoes, because that's a really, really important thing for many reasons. So why don't you give us a little info on that?
Sure. So, yes, obviously, we have to water plants if it doesn't rain, otherwise they will die. Plants need sunshine and they need carbon dioxide from the air. You know, those two are fairly self-explanatory, and they need water to grow. So if we don't give them enough water, they're going to get stressed. And a stressed plant is an unhealthy plant, is a plant that's more likely to get diseases. And it's also not going to produce those delicious tomatoes, which is why you planted it in the first place. However, we can't just be splashing on water whenever we want. So if we are irregular in our watering of tomatoes, especially once they start to fruit, that's when you're going to run the risk of things like the fruit splitting. So if you give them not very much water, the skin of the tomato fruit is nice and tight, and then you give them loads of water and it goes woohoo, and then it pumps loads of water into its tomato fruit and the skin splits as it swells and expands. So keep it regular, keep it nice and even. Generally, if you can, water them first thing in the morning, because then the plant has got all day to take up that water. If you're watering them in the evening, that's when the slugs and snails come out. And if the soil's nice and damp, it means that they've got a nice smooth surface to to slime over. So water them in the morning if you can. And always water the roots, around the roots, and water really thoroughly. So check your soil first, stick your finger in it. Is it nice and moist? If it is, you don't need to water it. If it's dry, water it slowly so that it doesn't just all run off. You know, make sure it's sinking in around where the roots are, and do that really thoroughly every day if you need to, or every other day. It's really, it's down to how, whether you're growing into in a pot or a raised bed or in straight into the ground, how fast that water is going to evaporate. And of course, the weather will be a big factor too.
Yeah.
So
you can't do it on a regular schedule.
Yeah. You've just got to get out there and be with your plants, be one with your plants. And watch it. And then the final watering tip is, as your fruits start to ripen towards the end of the season, that's when you actually want to tail off your watering, because now is when you want all those sugars to concentrate in your fruits. And if you water them loads, obviously they're going to get more dilute and you're going to get watery tomatoes. So just tail it off slightly, not so that the plants are drooping, but, you know, just start giving them less as the summer comes to an end, and you'll get much sweeter, more delicious tomatoes as a result.
Excellent. Our guest is Holly Farrell. She's a horticulturist and author of many gardening books, and her latest is The Tomato Grower's Handbook, Everything You Need to Know from Seed to Harvest and Beyond. Do you have any questions about growing tomatoes? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Coming up next week, we'll be live from Bayfield in Bloom. And our guests are going to be UW Extension statewide horticulture outreach specialist Bruce Spangenberg, DNR forest health specialist Paul Segun, and co-owner of Bayfield Winery and Blue Ox Cider, Phil Bradish. So we'll have those three gentlemen with Larry, and we always have a wonderful time. So we're looking forward to that. Right now, we're talking tomatoes with Holly Farrell, and we've got a call. Rita in Middleton. Go right ahead, Rita.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this great show. There is nothing like going out to your garden and picking a fresh tomato. My question is, putting eggshells around your plants. I've been collecting eggshells and throwing them around. Can I put too many on? Would that not be good for my tomato?
Hi, Rita. Interesting question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. No, I don't think you could put too many on. I mean, generally, everything in the ecosystem is about balance, right? It's, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Are you putting them on because of slugs and snails or for the nutrient value?
Just for the nutrient value. I save compost, and I put compost in when I plant them. So there are eggshells already in my compost and coffee grounds and all sorts of fruit and vegetable stuff. But yeah, I've just been adding extra eggshells. I just planted them last week, so just wanted to see if I should just back off on it now.
I don't think so. I don't think you need to either way, to be honest. I mean, it sounds like your homemade compost is brilliant, and that's, you know, probably got everything in it that your tomatoes are going to need anyway. Why don't you experiment? You know, if you've got more than one tomato plant, keep putting the eggshells around one and not around the other and see which grows better.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Rita. Have fun. speaking of fertilizing, what are your recommendations for fertilizing tomatoes? We talked about it a little bit, but let's expand on that.
Yeah, so, I mean, in general, I don't think you need to fertilize as in terms of buying bottles of fertilizer. You don't need to do that as much as the companies who sell that fertilizer would have you believe. Okay. So if you're planting them in good soil or good compost, then that's going to have a lot of the nutrients that they'll need anyway. And like I said, it's all about balance. If you're planting in a pot, then you will need to give them some extra food and food fertilizer, because the nutrients in that compost will run out by the end of the season. It only lasts about 6 weeks, your pot of compost, the nutrients in that. So after that, you could be giving them some liquid feed. I don't bother with the little plugs of slow release or controlled release fertilizer. I find they never really work. A lot of them have got plastic in them that you're then adding to the soil. So I wouldn't bother with any of those. Go straight to a liquid feed. You can use an organic seaweed feed that you can buy. That's a nice balanced one. That's really great. Well, I'm sure you have an equivalent to the one that we have here. Or you could be making your own. So you could brew up a bucket of nettle tea or comfrey tea, for example, just by steeping them in some water for a few days and then hoiking out the vegetation and using that to water your plants. You could make some molasses feed otherwise. So by using about a pound of molasses in 2 1/3 gallons, thereabouts, you know, it's not exact. Don't worry if a bit extra goes in. And that can be really good for tomatoes because that will not only add minerals to the soil, but it will also increase the sweetness and the acidity of your tomato. So you're getting a really great flavor profile. And it will increase the vitamin C content of your tomato as well. So it's going to be even healthier for you.
I have never heard of that. That's a new one on me. That's really interesting. So just molasses, like treacle, like you get out of a jar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give it a good stir so it's all nice and dissolved and dilute in the water.
Amazing.
And then, and water it on. Don't, you know, not for every watering.
No,
so
no,
do that
no.
maybe mm-hmm. once a fortnight or mm-hmm. once a week at most. But,
okay.
But yeah, give it a try.
Oh, that's
excellent.
Like
you said, experiment.
Yeah.
Do that on some and not on others. See which come out better.
Yeah, that's half the fun of gardening is experimenting and see what works, especially vegetable gardening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Being curious.
Yeah. So just to kind of go over some of the things we didn't talk about in your book, you do talk about like troubleshooting for some things. You talk about preserving, obviously, propagating, which is fun. Finding, you know, getting the seeds, saving the seeds. And you have a section in the back where you talk about some really cool tomatoes that people probably haven't heard of before. And you suggest they try them. Are there a few favorites that you think that people might want to run out or not run out and find because they might be hard to find, but to look for when they're looking for new ones? Give us a couple of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point in the year, it's going to be a little more difficult because you're basically looking at buying plants, not seeds. But there's always next year.
Yep.
So start having a look now for sure. I hate this question, I have to say.
I'm sure people
because there's just so many to choose from that are so delicious.
Well, I always look at the names like I do for wine. I look at the labels. So.
Yeah.
But the blue bayou looks really cool.
Yes. Yeah. And then you can get some of those anthocyanins that you would, you know, get from eating blueberries and things like that.
Right.
But in your tomatoes as well.
Right.
So, I like to grow a variety of different colors and a variety of different shapes and a variety of different types to use for different things. There are some that I would always grow. And that would probably, that list would be Sun Gold, which is a yellow cherry tomato, really delicious and sweet. Yellow Pear, another, it's a cherry tomato, it's a baby pear tomato. So it does look like a very small pear, narrower at the top and bulbous at the base. And that's one of the oldest recorded varieties as well. And that's absolutely delicious. Black cherry, Gardener's Delight. For cooking, probably Rio Grande or San Marzano is the classic Italian variety for the plums to grow for cooking. I really like Ailsa Craig as a salad tomato. That's it just because it just looks like a child's drawing of a tomato. It's round, it's red, it's everything you could want from a salad tomato. But Tigerella, the stripy one, is really great as well and has a lovely flavour. In the beefsteaks, I do like Marmond, but Black Crème is a really delicious and amazing looking one as well. So really dark skin and then a red flesh on the inside. So when you slice it open, if you're growing tomatoes to put on Instagram, that's definitely one to grow.
Well, of course we are.
Principe Borghese is a great one for being able to store by hanging the plant upside down, like I was talking about earlier. There's so many.
Amazing.
So, yeah, I try to grow a few favorites and then at least experiment with at least 1, 2, 3, 10 new ones each year.
And a good place to find some that you might not have thought about is just going to a farmer's market and see if you like them, find out what they are and try them for next year. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So we're getting near the end here, but I just wonder if you could talk about this green tomato jam that you've got. You've got a few recipes in here, and this one sounds really interesting. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, it came out of everybody usually uses their green tomatoes, you know, end of the season. You've had to harvest them all because the frosts are coming. They're definitely not going to ripen, even if you put them in a drawer with a banana for weeks. They're going to stay green. So what do you do with them? Because you don't want to throw them away. You've put all that effort into growing them. So the standard thing is usually chutney, which is delicious, and I'm not knocking it. But I wanted to do something different, and I like making jams. And so because they're quite firm and zingy and they've got that, it's hard to describe the taste as anything but green. You know, it's that sort of herbaceous-y, fresh taste. And so it goes so well with lemons. So basically, yeah, the recipe is you cook up your tomatoes, your green tomatoes, with lemons, and it makes a jam. And it's delicious on toast. If you like lemon curd or anything else, or marmalades, you know, those kind of less sweet things to spread on your jam. It is still sweet, but it's on the zesty and sharp end of a jam scale, I suppose. So yeah, definitely want to give it a try.
Yeah, it sounds really good. It's just the tomatoes, lemons, and a little bit of sugar. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So again, the name of the book is The Tomato Grower's Handbook, Everything You Need to Know from Seed to Harvest and Beyond. Again, it's a smaller book. It fits in your hand really nice. You can take it out to your garden, but, you know, maybe not, because you don't want to get it dirty. So, we've got like a minute left, but people have been growing tomatoes upside down and sideways in the last few years. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, they look great in the photos. Yeah. I mean, plants, they want to grow up upright, you know, so eventually they're going to start curling around and they're going to start growing up again. So, I mean, you can do it as a novelty. And I always say, experiment, be curious. If it works for you, then great. But I think if you are stuck for space, try growing instead the little tabletop varieties, the dwarf varieties of tomatoes, where you can grow them the normal way up, green side up, and they can sit on your table and you can pick your own dinner straight off the plant.
Perfect, perfect. And remember to keep them watered, right?
Yes.
What are the other ones that we really need to keep in mind?
Make sure
tomatoes.
They've got enough sunshine and enough warmth.
Enough warmth.
Sunshine,
warmth, and water, and they will come together for a fantastic fruit, vegetable, whatever you want to call it, for your summer enjoyment.
Yes. Good luck and enjoy, everybody.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Holly. We really appreciate you coming, spending some time with us to talk about tomatoes.
I have very much enjoyed talking about tomatoes.
Wonderful. Thank you. We've been talking with Holly Farrell. She's a horticulturist and author. Her latest book is called The Tomato Grower's Handbook, Everything You Need to Know from Seed to Harvest and Beyond. Stay with us, because after the news, we're going to talk with PJ Leash about insects.